Well, that's exactly right. What we've done is we've taken the 360, we've added a DSP, and then we've...
What happened to your eyes?
Well, my guy, you don't need eyes to see.
I did not say this.
Shot an unarmed man.
He should arm himself. He's gonna decorate his saloon with my friend.
Fucking mother whore. Shit!
You're not trying to draw a psycho picture. You really are crazy.
I mean, it's not like I'm committing murder. I'm not killing anybody. The crack is what's gonna kill him. Hell, it's killing them already. I'm just speeding up the process, that's all. I'm not shooting anyone, I'm not stabbing anyone. I'm merely gonna place a lethal form of crack in their presence. They don't have to take it. Nobody has a gun to their head. If they don't wanna do it, they can just say no.
Welcome to Pop Culture Purgatory.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Pop Culture. Jeremy.
This is Deson.
Alright.
Tron's not back yet. He'll be back soon. No Joe this episode, but just me and Mike, like old school ways.
Oh yeah.
We're gonna be talking about a movie that neither of us have seen by a infamous director.
Right.
With several very high claim actors in the movie.
It's an incredible cast.
Incredible cast. But before we get into that, we're going to talk a little bit about what we've been watching or listening to recently. Mike, would you like to go first or me?
No, you go ahead, man.
Okay, so I wanted to mention this. We did a Harry Potter month a little while ago, and I had went ahead and listened to all those books and twice in a row.
Which is fun, too, because I'm sure the readings are awesome. You know what
I mean? The Jim Dale stuff is a lot of fun. And they're just really fun and interesting books. And I was like, all right, let me give it a little break. What should I listen to now? And for some reason, what popped in my brain is Thomas Harris. And I was like, all right, I'm going to buy Red Dragon, because Dragon's one of the greatest books of all time, in my opinion.
Great choice, too, yeah.
This fascinated me. So when I was in my 20s, when I was working for my dad, we were doing construction. Walmart used to, believe it or not, people out there younger than us, Walmart used to have an audiobook section. And I would go there and I'd get paid on a Friday. When I get paid, I'd go to the audiobook section. It'd be CDs and cassettes.
Oh, yeah. Our libraries would have – libraries still have them now, too.
Libraries still have that stuff now, yeah, for sure.
It's like the only place you can go rent them. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. For a long period of time, Hastings had it too, but when we they sort of just canceled that shit up.
Along with Hastings, goddammit.
Yeah, along with Hastings too. But I went there and I got paid and I bought Manhunter. It has like the iconic cover of the Red Dragon with the woman. What's the line? The Great Red Dragon with the woman shawl and the moon or something like that, or the sun.
I can't remember, man.
It's been a couple of days because I just started listening to Silence of Lambs again. But Red Dragon, the one I bought, the audio version I bought then was unabridged. I didn't know what unabridged meant or what abridged meant. So I got the shorter version of the book, which was read by, which was narrated by Chris Sarandon. Sarandon's, it's really good.
That's cool.
But I on Audible they have the full abridged version or unabridged version, which is written by a different guy who does a great job at it. But is it the difference between the abridged and the unabridged is like 7 to 12 hours.
Oh wow!
So yeah, way different. So I get the full story this time, and I love it even more. What a great, I mean, Thomas Harris is writing.
He's an incredible writer. Though I kind of don't like how events unfold in Hannibal, it's one of the most beautifully written books I've ever read in my entire life.
Yeah. There's a lot of goofy stuff in Hannibal. There's a lot of like really well-written stuff in Hannibal.
The whole book is well-written. He just makes choices. That's all I'll say.
I mean, I'll just say this. There are two main characters, and the way they end is
stupid, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, it's just not great. Yeah. But I will say Hannibal Rising is actually a pretty damn good book, too.
I liked it. I didn't realize how poorly received it was when it came out, because me and my brother didn't really either. We heard the book was coming out, so like we were first at fucking Barnes & Noble's at the midnight to get that book, you know? Yeah. And both read it, both loved it. I thought it was great. Yeah. And then we heard the movies come out. I was like, oh hell yeah. The movie is
it's all right.
It's okay. It's better than the movie version of Hannibal.
I would say the Hannibal Rising is definitely better than Hannibal.
Yeah.
Really bizarre to say it.
It's like, I feel like I'm like having a manic breakdown saying those. Like, doesn't even make sense. I can't rationalize this.
I don't know.
But as you're saying though, I feel like Hannibal is just like one of the best written books, and I can't imagine how great they sound on the audiobook. I would love. I'm gonna have to check that out.
Yeah, so I'll just say this real quickly. So Silence of the Lambs is read by Frank Mueller. And Frank Mueller, he narrates.
Frank who?
His name's Frank Mueller. M-U-E-L-L-R, I believe.
I was like, what the fuck? No. That sounds
but
awful.
He reads, I think he reads most of the Dark Tower audiobooks.
That's cool.
So he's great. Sadly passed away, I think from cancer or motorcycle accident. But
those are too far different spectrums. Sorry, that's just funny.
I used to know, but it's tragic. They're both tragic.
The death is tragic no matter what.
I believe, let me look at this real quick. Red Dragon is read by Alan Sklar. Never heard of the band's name before, but he does a great. That's not him, but he's a great voice narrating the book and everything. But it is a great Dalahide voice too. So
nice.
But Frank Mueller does a lot of in Silence of the Lambs. This is the first time I've ever heard this, because in Silence of the Lambs, the version I bought back in the day, which was also abridged, was read by Kathy Bates.
Okay.
So. Listening to Frank Mueller do it this time is a completely different experience. Because I thought, because the only version I ever heard was Kathy Bates' version.
And I'm sure hers is great.
I loved.
Of course.
It's really good. And it's really cool. Audible has both those versions. You can listen to both. And then I believe Hannibal is read by Thomas Harris, who's an awesome narrator. And so is Hannibal Rising. It's also narrated by him.
That's cool.
And they also have his first book on there too. I forget what it's called, but I've heard it's a really great war novel. So
didn't he have something black?
Yeah, black something like that.
Black Sunday or something like that. Yeah.
That's it.
They made a movie of that as well.
Did they? Okay. All right. It was really fun.
I'm pretty sure it has to do with like a terrorist attack with like a blimp over a football game, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe you're correct. Yes.
Yeah. I think I read that book. I think I read it way back when I got into, I think actually when Hannibal Rising came out. Me and my brother both got back into rereading the books, and I got hooked on Thomas Harris, so I read that. But it's like I said, that was probably 2007. Long time.
That book's pretty old. It's his first book, so it's pretty old at this point. But
right.
But you're just too cool, Mike. Too fucking cool, man. I'm not.
I don't even honestly, that was kind of like whenever we had just moved out there. We're staying with my grandparents. So it was like, fuck, dude, I had to do something.
I know, but it's cool. Like I got out of it. I literally just had a conversation with Joe the other night about a bridge and underbridge book. He's like, what's an underbridge or what a bridge book is? I'm like, holy shit, you didn't know this? Like, fuck, let's tell you. And then she was like, you're just fucking too cool, Brewster.
That's awesome. Like, you are, bro. We are. We're very cool.
But yeah, I just, again, we'll do one on the podcast, the compare and contrast with Thomas Harris. But Thomas Harris is one of the greatest fucking writers of all time. The writing is just super.
I just wish we would get something. And I know he worked on Hannibal, the TV show, which was great. I thought that show
did he? Really? Well done. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, he was heavily involved with Hannibal.
Wow.
Okay. But I wish we would kind of get something else from him. Or just a fucking conclusion to the character of Hannibal Lecter, you know?
It could happen.
We don't really have one.
It could happen. I don't know, but I mean, it could happen. Maybe, yeah. But it's been so long since Hannibal Rising came out.
That's what I'm saying. That was 2006 or seven, somewhere around there.
That's a long time ago. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I was just mentioning a little bit, but the Harry Potter thing. I mean, I really love. I was thinking not love, but like I was really thinking about like could we get one more? What would it be now? You know, like because that last book is so. I mean, it's a good book, but like the ending is so kind of like, you know.
The Cursed Child. Are you talking about that one?
The Deathly Hallows.
That shit's terrible. Oh yeah, yeah. Okay, I see what you mean. Well, I remember they came out with that play, The Cursed Child, or whatever.
Oh, not that.
That shit's fucking terrible.
Yeah,
I never read it, so I didn't know.
But this is the I think somebody else. She didn't write that, did she? Somebody else wrote that stuff.
She's involved in it.
She's involved.
She has to give approval to everything. Well, she's a fucking terrible person.
Well, she is. But those first, the seven books are fantastic books.
They are.
I mean, just that last like couple pages of the last book, I'm just like, you know, get a little bit more here, you know, like it's a lot of shit happened here. But it also makes sense that we wouldn't really get involved with that because this fucking thing is ended and most things just end with this sort of tragedy like that. So it makes sense, but like, damn, I wish I'd have got some more, but
hey, I agree. I agree. And honestly, it does feel, you know, the little flash forward kind of sequence that we get when they're older. It does 18 feel like, years later. Yeah. It's like, ugh, God damn it. Like what happened in the 18 years? I would love to get,
right.
But also I would also love, I love the world she built. I would like a story away from Harry Potter. Go back hundreds. That's why I did enjoy Hogwarts Legacy, the game. But it gets repetitive as fuck as a sandbox style.
Yeah.
But the story was interesting. Like, you know, take me in other. I just, you know, she's got this whole fucking world. Why not write others? Yeah, it's just it blows my mind.
I agree. And the quote unquote book or novella.
It's like
or whatever you
it's like
call
the
it.
Star Wars getting stuck on Luke Skywalker, and they don't know what to do. And now it's going to be Rey Skywalker is getting it. Yeah. It's like I don't give a fuck. Real.
Don't give me Quidditch that Quidditch book, History Through Time or some shit. I don't want to read that shit.
Right.
Give me something else, man. I mean, fuck. I don't want to read about fucking Newt Scalamander or whatever the fuck his name is.
Right. And I would have enjoyed those movies more if they stuck with that and they just try to shoehorn in Dumbledore and his gay background. Yeah. It's like, my God.
And Grindelwald and shit, too. It's like, this shoehorned him in. It's like, who cares? Whatever.
Right.
But yeah, I'm with you, man. It's just one of those universes where you could get more stuff, but like, it's not happened. So
I agree.
And I would at this point, it's definitely not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Anyways, Mike, what about you, man? What's going on with you?
So I haven't really been reading or listening to anything lately. I have been kind of reading comics, but nothing like major, just kind of old ones I have. But right. what I did watch recently that I thought was really good was Ripley on Netflix. And it's kind of a remake of The Talented Mr. Ripley, which I know you remember the movie with Matt Damon from 1997. It's based on a series of books that were written back in, like, I think the 50s or 60s by a female writer, Patricia something.
Wow.
There's several. Ripley's Game, which is also another movie made starring John Malkovich, who's playing the same. We own that movie in Vudu.
I might have to watch that then. Yeah.
And there's been several movies made about Ripley. Ripley's Game, The Talented Mr. Ripley. Apparently, Barry Pepper has a fucking Ripley movie called Ripley Underground that I can't find anywhere. It's got a 6.0. I know. Kyle told me that. I was like, what?
Oh.
Okay. Right. Patricia Highsmith is the author's name.
Okay.
And she was born in 1921 and passed away in 1995. So these books are probably written 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, somewhere in that era. I'm not exactly sure when. Right, very fascinating. This guy is an incredible con man. and just a ruthless son of a bitch. And if anyone hasn't seen the old movie, I do recommend watching with Matt Damon. It's very Matt Damon kind of dumbed down with his portrayal, but it's still a good movie. I still think they do a good job, but the series is incredible.
Okay, cool. Jude Law came out recently and said it's fucking awesome. So
I was just reading that. He's like I was almost crying when I was watching Imago. And Andrew Scott is incredible as Tom Ripley. Dakota Fanning is fucking badass in it as Marge Sherwood.
Cool.
There's a few other people you'll recognize, and then there's a lot you will not.
All right.
But my favorite who pops up right in the first episode is fucking Bokeem Woodbine is in this series. Woodbine! Yeah, I was like, oh shit, I'm a fan already.
The ageless man, Bokeem Woodbine.
And my only critiques are it just like some it there's times I was kind of fast forwarding lightly because there's so many dramatic long pauses sometimes where nothing's being said. They're just it's like a battle of staring at each other without changing expressions like drastically, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just all these cuts and it's like, all in black and
like
white.
70s so like TV show drama shit, like
very 60s and 70s, very dude. You're spot on. And it's all in black and white, which I think is awesome.
That's cool.
I love it. But there are times I do think it's kind of a bit of a detriment, and I wish they would have maybe used more color shots here and there, you know, but there's only like one or two shots where you get color. It's like, oh, we're really do it like pick a theme and go with that. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
But these are all just bullshit critiques by me. You know what I mean? It's a great series. I give it like an easy 8.5 all across the board. Nice. Yeah. Andrew Scott like just kills it as the man. He was in Fleabag season 2 as the priest who is, if you've never seen Fleabag, you need to watch that.
I will. I know I need to watch it.
It's also on Amazon Prime too. But yeah, man. So Ripley, I binged that shit. Like I said, like I was telling you during the break, Jeremy, I haven't really had a lot of time to just fucking watch shit or play video games. And so
that's what I'm thankful for this show, because we actually like we can watch something
exactly
every fucking Tuesday. So hey, or every Wednesday. So
exactly, and make time for it just to kind of little to just to
exactly yeah,
and let steam off. Yeah. Fuck. Anyway, but Ripley is a great show. It's on Netflix. Definitely check it out. Great fucking series.
Cool. Great recommend. Please go check out both. But we're going to move on to the main event here. and we're going to talk about 1990s Desperate Hours.
The following MGM UA motion picture is coming soon to a theater near you.
In the 3 years since Michael Bosworth's incarceration, he's completed the Johns Hopkins Creative Writing Workshop. Michael Bosworth's IQ has been measured above 130.
Man is not a gentleman unless he knows how to mix a proper martini.
The guy is a maniac.
I demand to represent myself.
Mr. Bosworth, if necessary, I will have you gagged and bound.
I present the court two letters of character reference from nationally known authors.
In the sky, Bosworth believes he can escape from anywhere. Now I'd like to start setting up roadblocks in the area.
Request denied. Bosworth is in a house somewhere that sure as hell a hostage is. That's the way he plays.
I'm a very fair man, Laura. You know, I would never hurt anyone unless they were trying to hurt me. I swear it.
That gun the kid was carrying is registered to Nora Cornell.
Nora? Hey! I want to apologize for this morning.
I could be inside that house in 1 minute. Flashbangs hit the door, we make a 3-point entry, it's all over.
I'm sorry, Cornell!
You know, I really like this family, but you're pushing my patience.
We're giving that family a chance.
I have this wacko on my side, so I think I can take him.
Hey, I just don't want to break up our happy family here.
All right, so I'm gonna give you a little synopsis here before me and Mike really go into this thing fucking raw. And it's a very, it's very simplistic. An escape con.
It's very predictable. Yeah.
It's very predictable. On the run from the law. Wow. Moves into a married couple's house and takes over their lives. That's the whole fucking plot. And it sums everything up.
And that's what happens. Yeah.
Michael Cimino himself directs this movie, the man, the myth, the legend,
the infamous director,
Director, the man who directed Heaven's Gate, one of the greatest box office bombs of all time.
And also The Deer Hunter, which is one of the greatest movies of all time. And
Deer Hunter, which is one of the greatest movies of all time. Also, I'd also say Silent Running is an awesome movie, too.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Before that, with Bruce Dern, who's a hippie in space with robots and
all that. I want to get that fucking Arrow 4K so bad.
I've heard it look. However, it's super fucking clean. So,
I believe it.
But this is interesting. Also, me and Mike talked about this last night. We forgot that he did like The Year of the Dragon, also
with Mickey Rourke as well.
And we haven't gone through the roster here yet, but weirdly enough, Michael Cimino's profile picture on IMDb looked just like what's his name? Tony Scott's.
With the red hat. I agree.
The glasses.
I always forget he directed Thunderbolt and Lightfoot too. That's a great
movie. Really?
Yeah. Oh,
shit, I forgot.
19. He directed that right before the Deer Hunter, 4 years before.
Holy shit! Wow, that's we got to talk about that one day too.
Yeah, and I don't think Heaven's Gate's a bad movie yet, but I've never seen the director's cut either. Heaven's Gate.
Oh yeah, I've heard the director's cut, the one that Criterion bought a couple 3 years ago. So I heard it's really good. So,
yeah, I've been wanting to get that.
Me too, man. Me too. I've heard it's like an epic fucking movie.
The guy, he's infamous for including this movie as well, of just having his movies just cut and torn apart by producers and shit.
Yeah.
Because he makes epics. He makes long films, you know, and they're like, oh, you got to cut it the fuck down. I mean, Heaven's Gate's like 3 hours and 40 minutes long. His cut, you know.
Yeah, his cut. Yeah, yeah.
Apparently, Desperate Hours it suffered the same thing, that the producers just cut this thing to pieces.
I didn't realize that. We're obviously, I didn't do any research on this yet. I just wrote down notes and watched the movie. Right. But I can't wait till we get into the actual, like, the nitty and gritty of all this shit, because I'm sure there's tons of cuts in this movie. And it's so bizarre to me. Like they know Camino's doing it. He had this big flop. But it's also a beautiful movie from what I've seen. And he's continued to do beautiful movies up until like the late 90s. But anyways, this was
his last theatrical release.
I can't believe that. But you see the budget, and you're like, okay, yeah. One last chance, and he blew it again. Like, there you go.
Well, I still think it was once again just like a problem with producers, like just cutting it to pieces and not letting it be what it needs to be. You know?
Which is interesting, because this is produced by Dino De Laurentiis. Dino De Laurentiis did the same thing to fucking David Lynch with Dune, and he gave him a freaking free movie, which is Blue Velvet, which is a moderate success, but a big I think a big reviewers really liked it back in the day.
Oh, and so, it was a defining moment for Lynch after Dune.
It was interesting to me, and I think Rafaela De Laurentiis also produced this too. So I could be wrong about that, but. But anyways, so the cast: Mickey Rourke, Anthony Hopkins, Mimi Rogers, Kelly Lynch, Elias Koteas, holy shit, Casey Jones himself, David Morse.
I know, blew my mind. Shawnee Smith blew my mind more than anything else. That was like, what the fuck?
The Blob remake, I mean, Saw, I mean, she's gorgeous, right?
Where she pops up, yeah.
But, I mean, everybody else.
Yeah, she was like 21 when this was filmed. Or 20, wow. Something like that. Yeah.
21, okay. And we have Dean Norris, who plays the bald FBI man, who's in two. He's been in tons of 80s.
Is it Terminator 2? He's one of the SWAT guys. We can't forget Uncle Frank is in this fucking movie briefly as the tax guy from Home Alone.
What?
Gary Bauman, what? I'm not sure. That's him? Yeah, that's the tax guy that comes in. That's God. All I'll say until we
now
get to it.
You're
yeah.
cooking.
Yeah. Oh yeah, poor Frank.
You little freak. Yeah. It's him. Yeah, man.
Get out of here, you little freak.
Holy shit. And then we have James Rebhorn, who plays the prosecutor.
Right.
Man, that dude's been in every fucking like law
TV
fucking,
movie. Yeah, I swear.
Yeah, he's been in everything, man. This is, I mean, This is an interesting movie. It's like Michael Cimino wanted to make a fucking he got some fucking inspiration from not just Hitchcock, but Brian De Palma's Hitchcock versions of stuff. And he made this movie because it feels
to do like a noir, I think, you know, and it's but like his version of it.
I agree. But it feels like a Brian De Palma movie.
It does. Like, 100, especially this era, Brian De Palma.
Yeah, because it is like over the fucking top. Like,
oh, yeah. Cheesy at times and just so like God with the cops and like the head female cop has this weird like southern accent she's trying to hit
so whole... weird dude
yeah
and she feels dubbed the whole time like I was never sure if it was her real voice or not because it felt like
I think it's her but who the fuck knows. I didn't see any trivia on whether or not she got dubbed, but man, she's got it's strange.
And there are times where because me and Joe watched this last night together, and there are times where movie really feels like a Dario Argento movie. Like it's like these
I can see that. I can see that.
And they both are totally like you never
so
really
fucking inept.
Yeah, so inept, but also they don't really explain who these people are. Obviously they're law enforcement, but like you never really get introduced to them, like really. Right. You know, they're just kind of just there the whole time.
So yeah, definitely very. I can feel that Argento, man. Oh my God, you're so spot on. What were you saying?
I'm just saying that, I continue on with like a Italian exploitation movie. The plot makes no sense. Like absolutely no sense. Like if the dude like escapes prison, sees a rental sign outside of someone's house, it doesn't mean that someone doesn't live there. People could possibly still live there, but he comes in and like he thinks this is the right place to be.
Well, I guess it's a better chance of it maybe nobody being there.
Maybe, but he knocks on the door a lot or rings the doorbell a lot and sees a woman inside and they go for it and it's bizarre. It's almost like a fever dream in a way. It's like a dream like presence to it. Like it makes me like David Morris is like some weird, like on the spectrum, like guy. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, it's very strange. And I have to mention, this is a remake too. The Desperate Hours from 1955 with Humphrey Bogart.
Hey, you blew my mind with that, dude. I can't believe that.
Directed by William Wyler, who directed so many movies back in the day.
Oh, yeah, William Wyler, yeah.
That one's got like a 7.5. I've never seen that one. It's not available on streaming anywhere, so I'll have to see it on the high seas. Oh, no, it's on Pluto. It's on Pluto TV.
On Pluto?
The Desperate Hours, yeah. And so I wonder how – I want to see it now because to see how – more unhinged this one actually is, you know? Like fuck, everybody's on coke in this movie, I guarantee it.
Oh man,
guarantee
like,
it.
Anthony Hopkins is like 0 to 1,000 at the beginning of this movie. It's insane how like much he talks and moves and like his fucking arms going everywhere. He's like getting excited, like way too excited. Like it's just like at some point, like at the beginning of the movie, like when Anthony Hopkins shows up, because so maybe Rogers and Anthony Hopkins are getting in the middle of like getting a divorce.
Yeah.
And he comes up for like sort of his like I guess his turn
to pick up the kids,
pick up the kid, but he sits next to Shawnee Smith and is like, did he have a fucking like did he have an affair with her? Oh no, that's
dude,
the daughter.
So weird. Okay, he's like, so yeah, he's going straight Donald Trump, Joe Biden, like sniffing her hair and fucking
talking to her ear and shit.
Dude, it's so immediately creepy. And like, so yeah, I agree. I was like, is this? And he's like, no. Then she's like, oh, I'm getting her fucking boyfriend to bring me to riding because she'd rather him than her dad, which I guess is kind of normal, but it's just really creepy. It's a really creepy moment.
It is. Yeah. It's really bizarre. It's why I was really thinking like it really felt like one of those Italian exploitation films, you know, it's like it's right, just like
we watching Lolita.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just like a movie where like,
I know what you mean.
Yeah, the information is just like it's just so sped up, it's over your head, and you're like, what's happening? And then you just kind of go with the flow of the movie. But because like the whole like you know we have a Kelly Lynch is in here. She's playing Mickey Rourke's like a defense attorney,
lawyer, who's just as crazy as he is.
Yeah, and she's looking super hot as Kelly Lynch usually does.
Oh yeah.
And then like there's like a bunch of like aggressive like tit shots with her, like,
dude,
it's
so weird. The whole crazy. I'm glad the breakout sequence. So first of all, like, you know, she goes through the whole court thing and he admonishes her and like kind of goes off with her in the middle of courtroom, asks to speak with him alone. And then she's got like the gun tucked in between her leg and her stockings.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, it's weird. He grabs her leg like a little bit, then grabs the gun and fucking, you know, gets out of there, whatever. Slaps her and has her handcuffed the cop. And then after that, when he's dragging her outside, her tits just pop out of nowhere. And like, yes, I don't know where the fuck that came from. I swear to God, it was just the director was like, you know what? I want to see this actor's tits. So this is what I'm going to do. Because like, there's not even like, he's just dragging her and somehow her blouse gets ripped open and then just there are tits. And it's like, what the fuck? That's so random.
It's really bizarre and random. Yeah. It's just very, like that sort of like that foreigner sort of like, oh, show the tits. Like, let's show them. Let's see them. You know, like,
I guarantee you, just to do it. Yeah.
Let's just do it. Yeah.
Just to fucking exploit them and get them out there.
I mean, she did it in Roadhouse. Why did she do it here? Let's do it. Check it out.
Right.
But like, yeah, it's very bizarre. Like, this aggressive, like, Mickey Rourke is a total pile of shit. Like, he is so mean.
Everyone kind of sucks in this movie. Except maybe Mimi Rogers. And the kids.
The kids and Mimi Rogers. Yeah. Well, Mimi Rogers, I got to mention. I was going to mention this later
She's really rude to the fucking, when she calls for the heating guy. She's a fucking rich bitch right there. That tone through. Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. The heating guy, I was like, that's the only time I was like, and I thought, I was like, maybe like, is this like a performance? Like, to show
that.
But it makes no sense.
What happens to her. Like, I'm not, you know, equating the two. But
yeah.
Yeah,
but I will say that I thought Mimi Rogers is fucking awesome in this movie. Like, he's the only one.
She's the best one.
Her
acting wise.
Her and Elias Koteas, he's amazing in this movie. Like, as the brother of Mickey Rourke with the glasses.
Yeah, he plays it really well and shunned down, you know, because he's obviously not as cool as my brother Mickey Rourke, you know, or anywhere near as smooth or as good as a criminal. And then you got the fucking autistic guy who's like the psychopath, you know.
David Morris is
nuts.
Weird. Have you ever seen him in a movie like this before? Like his acting wise?
Well, I think I've seen him play some very asshole type, but nothing kind of like this.
Nothing this wacky, right?
Nothing this wacky, but I think I've seen him play some villain-esque roles, right?
I think so, yeah. But I mean, I do think he's good in the movie. But
I do too. He's a great actor. I think he's a really good actor.
I think he's a fantastic. I think he's an underrated actor. But I was like, man, I've ever seen Dave Morris act this way in a movie before. Even. Like, I don't know, because he's always like the head SWAT guy. He's the same
guy in all those movies. That's the crazy one in the heist group. You know, it's like it's what's his name in fucking Panic Room, what's Dwight Yoakam, and then Dwight, like, you know, there's always and he's great in that fucking movie. He's so great. He's
awesome, that movie, man. I think his name's Hank or something.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. But there's, I feel like in all heist movies, you know, he's Wayne Groves. There's always that that crazy piece of shit. And he is that guy too, like, and he pushes it, like, maybe he is on some kind of spectrum or just dumb. I don't know what I mean? But it's weird.
There's a really interesting line that he says through the half, because this movie, I think the movie moves really quickly.
Like, it's an hour and 45 minutes long. Yeah. Apparently, like, they left like 40 minutes on the cutting room
floor. Holy shit, 40 minutes.
That's just what the rumor is. And because they a lot of the footage, of course, over time has disappeared. There's only certain still frames left to prove that there's even any deleted footage.
Okay. Wow.
They hacked it to pieces. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Literally, let me read you what it actually says, because the way they worded in the trivia, I was like, wow. So according to some official sources, director Michael Cimino's original cut of this movie was mutilated by producers, resulting in a very badly edited movie filled with plot holes. The only known proof of deleted scenes are some stills which show a few of them. So mutilated, like,
yeah,
I've never heard it. Yeah. I've never heard it mentioned. Usually they say, oh, they cut out such, but they, like, obviously just tore this movie apart.
Yeah, that's bizarre. I mean,
anyone can add trivia on the site too. So,
right. I mean, the movie feel like, did it feel torn up to you? I mean, like,
it feels choppy to me. Yeah, I don't think when you say it moves quickly, that doesn't mean smooth to me. There's a lot of cuts and a lot of weird just jump, and then all of a sudden he's out in the desert throwing something out of a fucking trunk. And I'm like, where did he leap? What the fuck?
Lots of weird jumps. Very bizarre. Yeah. With Kelly Lynch driving up there, that makes no sense.
That makes sense to me. She's leaving a getaway car.
Yeah, but it's weird. Like, she goes to a bus stop on the highway, and like, there's no time.
Oh no, that's
like,
funny. The guy like, on the bike driving makes by, no like, sense. Just staring at. And man, but I made a note.
Cut
like,
to
holy
the
shit,
courtroom.
Yeah, exactly. That's what blew. Yeah, she's waiting on a bus stop. Then all of a sudden, she walks across the street. Now she's in a courtroom. It's like, what yeah, the fuck?
Okay.
But I did walk. I was like, holy shit, Kelly Hill's running them hills is fucking impressive. You see her almost stumble, yes. Like about to give, and she just keep like powering through. Like,
yeah, she is. Lord, yes. Yeah, and then Joe mentioned that too. Like, man, fucking heels, man. Power, like, all the respect.
Yeah,
all the way, man. Like, that's brutal shit. But for me, at the same time, I can see it. But at the same time, like I was saying before, like, it just feels again like an exploitation film.
Yes, 100%.
It's crazy because, like, I feel like, you know, if Camino is true here and talking about it's been cut out 40 minutes, and he wanted to make something really. Because we've all seen Deer Hunter. Deer Hunter flows, yeah. Like, perfectly. And it's been a while since I've seen it, but, like, I remember Deer Hunter. I've seen it twice, at least. A great fucking movie, an epic film. Right. But, like, it doesn't feel very choppy to me.
Yeah, this the original one, cut I just found, it was over 140 minutes.
Right, right.
This one clocks in, like, 105, I think.
Yeah, this we should also mention this movie. This is, I think we might have mentioned it before. I'm not sure, but like this movie bombed pretty badly.
Yeah,
on an $18 million budget, I mean $2 million.
Yeah,
that's rough. That's.
But I mean, this is, you know, I think. Oh no, Signs of the Lambs came out in 91, so this is a year before, if I'm not mistaken.
Hmm.
I was gonna say, oh, this is riding off the heels of that, you know, but no, it's not.
No, it'd be even more fascinating because, you know, Anthony Hopkins is basically in the entire movie. He's only like, what, 15 minutes in Silence of the Lambs. He won an Academy Award. So
yeah, something like that. Yeah, 15 or 16. It was one of those records for the least amount of screen time.
Crazy records, yeah, to win that award. But yeah, I mean, this movie is just a movie where people are being held up in the house and they are forced to do certain things. You've seen this plot before. I mean, you have.
But it has a
Michael Camino sort of touch to it, though. It feels more classy than that, with weird sort of bad acting here and there, and some goofiness here and there. But also, I think one of the best things about the movie, in my opinion, is probably the score, because it feels like I forget his name, the guy who did the score for a lot of like Hitchcock movies. Because the opening feels like Cape Fear, the music itself, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. That's not a Hitchcock movie, but it feels like that. It's the same kind of guy who did like the opening for Psycho.
Bernard Herrmann.
That's it. But it's got that feel to it, and I like the sloppiness of the whole like. Kidnapping of the family inside the house, how like things never go right. They're all bad at it.
I mean, everything's gone bad. Her getting ripped out of the hotel or the whole escape plan is just bad. Him getting the house is fucking bad. Her once again. Oh, I forgot to, you see another one of her titties whenever she's randomly throwing on a coat real quick to make the phone call. And she just see a random titty. I'm like, what the fuck? Yep. She had him getting paid per titty. She went to Holly Berry route. Hopefully. I hope she was.
I hope she was. Yeah. Well, I hope she was. Yeah.
Well,
because I think she's also like she acts really well in the movie too.
I do too. She plays that kind of what's the term? The Stockholm syndrome kind of.
Yes.
Where like, you know, you're in love with them, but terrified of them at the same time. So you do whatever they want.
And she's got this weird like deer in the headlights thing, but it's like it's like true fear, and which is weird, which is interesting to see in contrast with Mickey Rourke, who's this guy who's like sort of like presenting himself like this, like, I am the sorely worldly man. I have everything under control.
He's rough in this one, man. He really is.
He is rough in this one. Yes, I would agree. And it's interesting to me to see, David Morris and Elias Koteas being these real kind of like real characters. Like it's a really great scene. I think in my opinion with David Morris, he's like, I've never been alone before. When he decides to leave, he's like, you feel for the guy, like
making my way downtown. Welcome. And I'll kill you.
But that's really interesting to see him leave and see the downfall of him. Like, he has no idea what the fuck he's doing. Like,
no, he is out of his mind, or just he's paranoid schizophrenic. I really think he's probably on the spectrum, or
on the spectrum. Yeah,
Or maybe he's just mentally handicapped. You know, maybe he just has like an IQ of like 70, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking like I got some feels of like of Mice and Men sort of situation.
Oh,
like,
Lenny.
Yeah. Lenny sort of character. Elias is like the other character. But like, yeah, it was kind of interesting to me because they play it really right. Because like you can tell that David Morris's character and Elias Cody's character at some point pretty early on, like, I don't like doing this. Like, this is not fun to do. I don't like to terrorize right. people. I don't like the fact where David Morris goes up to because Mickey York tells David Morris to go up and watch Mimi Rogers to get changed, and he gets like way too close to her and shit, and she dresses. And
yeah,
it's fucking ever going to her room ever again. It's impolite, all this shit. But then at the same time, he tries to walk. Mickey Rourke tries to have her give that phone call to leave a voice message, but then he talks her through it kind of like very half heartedly, and then hits her in the fucking face with the fucking receiver. Right. Like, he's a piece of shit.
Again, when he's talking to his brother Elias Cotis, you know, he's like, "Don't fucking talk to me like that." And he smacks the shit out of him, like throws him down.
Yeah, exactly. It's and I even think that at some point, we've mentioned it before with Anthony Hopkins, him going from 0 to 100. I think he gets better like the halfway through the movie. He gets kind of like he kind of like balances out.
It becomes it's after he gets stabbed.
It's
a cool scene. It is.
He brings the knife out, and like he goes after David Morris, and he lets go, and then David Morris comes after him and stabs him. It's a really interesting. You never know what's going to happen. Besides the beginning and the end, you kind of figure out what's going to happen. But in the middle, it's kind of interesting because there are times where you can think that these are going to happen, but also there are times where like. What is it's kind of like nebulous, like what the fuck's going to happen here? It could be, it could be interesting, and sometimes I think it really is. I mean, the whole like the daughter coming in after being high, and like Anthony Hopkins, like, hey, go out and dinner and I'll pay you money, and they're like, nah, fuck it, that's fine, dude. And like,
yeah, right, no, you dumb fuck, please leave.
Tried, man.
At least the kid, the other boyfriend goes away, but he comes back.
But fun stuff like that. I mean, it is. It's got some interesting stuff to it.
I don't think it deserves a 5 point whatever it's got on IMDb. No, I don't. I really
even
don't.
Even with the edited version, I don't think it deserves that kind of rating.
Right.
I think it's classier than that, honestly.
And I think it's really Mimi Rogers' performance is really what like fucking is like the glue holding the whole thing together.
It's the anchor. Yeah, it's the anchor for sure. Yeah. I mean, that woman, she's amazing. From like point A to point C. I mean, the whole movie, she's great in the whole fucking film.
Yeah, absolutely.
Though I will say, when Mickey Rourke's like, what are we having for dinner tonight? She's like, I got a turkey. I'm like, you're making a whole fucking turkey tonight? Like, damn. Like,
okay. Now you're complaining, bitch. Like, you just asked me what's dinner. I tell you, you're mad about it now. Fuck. You just took over my house.
And I was trying to remember, Mike, like, there's a movie that has this feel to it where like the ex-husband
comes up. Ref.
What is it?
The Ref. It's very much like that. The burglar breaks in and it's like on Christmas and they hate each other. That movie's amazing, by the way.
Yeah, I would say what's his name does a way better job being as the Ref and trying to figure out people's problems than
Dennis Leary. He's great.
Yeah, Dennis Leary.
Kevin Spacey is as great as Kevin Spaceyist in that one.
Oh boy, yeah. Mickey Rourke, he's trying his best here, but he's being a like
he's just overacting.
A wink to the fucking.
I think
camera
it's too much cocaine. Yeah, right, dude. You're fucking right. You're right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so pretty. I'm about to go do boxing and fuck my face up with plastic surgery in 5 years.
Oh my god. The only person on IMDb that looks terrible is Mickey Rourke.
He looks like, you know, they say like lizard people. They say he looks like one of them now. You know, it's like some of those fashion, like Donatella Versace now. She looks like a lizard. Like, it's like all the surgeries. It's terrifying.
Damn. Yeah. You're right. It is definitely a hard switch watching this.
Right, he's a good looking dude. Like,
he's
what?
Great looking dude. Yeah. Fuck. Man. I mean, he's in one of my favorite movies of all time. Angel Heart, one of my favorite movies of all time.
Oh, man, I know. God damn, that's a fucking movie.
Fantastic fucking guy in that.
Yeah.
Great actor in that movie, man. But, this is – he's chewing up the scenery, man, big time. But, I mean, it's not really it's not that big a deal. I mean, it's fine, whatever it is. But like,
yeah, because like, this is not a
He doesn't feel too out of place, and but I mean, he's not, like you say, basically he's not great at it. But like everybody else feels like there's something at stake here, and Mickey Rourke seems to be like, this is just a fucking game. Like, who gives a shit?
I just want
like,
my girl. I just want my baby. Yeah, right.
I'd kill for her. You know, all this stupid shit.
That's the only one I kill for, telling his brother. Thanks, Dick.
And he just talks to his brother while he bleeds out on his girlfriend's fucking body. And he's just like, oh, he's like, hey, come on. Trust me, man. Trust me. All this shit. And it's like, your brother's dead. He's right. Fucking dead, dude. I mean, damn. It feels even with the David Morris thing where he leaves to go to Mexico, all of that stuff feels chopped up too, or like he like breaks because he sees cops coming. They're not coming for him. He's going to the house.
Right.
He crashes the car basically, and he pulls the dude's body out and puts it down the river, and he runs that way. And like all of a sudden, there's like SWAT. It's kind of weird. I don't know.
You can tell it's been chopped to hell. That's what I'm saying.
Like chopped up right there.
Yeah. Just several scenes like that. And I mean, just also with, like we were saying, Uncle Frank, he just kind of pops in as the tax guy. You know what I mean? And then
tax guy. Yeah.
Poor bastard. And his name is Ed Talent. I was like, that's a fucking weird name. Your town's going down, bro. just gets fucking blasted with the pillow to the chest. So brutal. Like,
it is brutal, man.
Goodbye, Uncle Frank.
Goodbye, Uncle Frank. Shouldn't put a pillow up in the fucking chest.
Dude, brutal, man. It's just funny how he just pops in and he's dead. So it's I'm sure, because he said, oh, I stopped by earlier. I bet there probably was a scene where you saw him, you know?
Mm-hmm. But I love the sort of domino effect of that scene, too, because like the kid goes to escape out the window through the roof. That was the Anthony Hopkins idea. And that's when me and Roger was like, don't fucking do it. The bad idea. Don't want to risk any more family members right now. But the kid goes and does it on his own, definitely by his father's words, against his mother, his mom. He drops down from the roof and immediately runs right into Frank. And then all of a sudden the door opens up and then boom, right there, everything just fucking falls apart immediately.
Yeah.
And I like that sloppiness of it though. It's like nothing really works out for anybody. It's
right. Funny. I mean, because sometimes that's how it goes, you know. Fuck. Yeah. You can only do so much.
Even the fact that like with the situation with Kelly Lynch's gun and how that gun also gets transferred to Mickey Rourke at some point, and Mickey Rourke also has a different gun. And I won't say what's up with the guns. You'll watch the movie yourself. It's easy to find.
Right.
But I mean that whole situation is really fun, and the fact the reaction that Anthony Hopkins has with the gun, the fact that he could make a decision and the fact that he does not, is interesting too. And then also the decision, the way the cops make.
Shit is
bizarre, but yeah, that's
the cops in this movie, especially. I mean, but I guess they kind of play like the real life ones. They don't have to protect you. Good point. They do not.
I just find it interesting that they let the guy, everybody go back into the house. But
it's fucking stupid.
Bizarre. Okay. But yeah, I mean, it's a fun sort of kind of a little like heist sort of, captive sort of movie. It's
hostage kind of film.
Hostage situation thing, kind of like, Hostage, with, Bruce Willis, which I think is a good movie, but,
I like that movie. Yeah.
Me too. But it's one of those type. It's interesting to me because Michael Camino, you know, once he makes these epics and he goes to something super simplified here, a movie I feel like most people even at this time have probably seen before. But he goes this route and he tries to make it really epic, in a way, and really cinematic in a way.
And I feel like it probably was. I feel like his version, because, like I said, I feel like there is a great movie somewhere buried in here. I really do.
Right. Yeah, I would agree. Yeah. I didn't hate it. Me neither. I didn't love it, but I thought it was fun to watch. It was the first time me and you have ever even heard of it. We just kind of looked up movies and stuff like that, and we found this, and it sounded cool. And, you know, with Michael Camino's name attached to it, I was like, wow, that's even cooler. We got Anthony Hopkins. Well, Mimi Rogers. Holy shit.
Oh, so it's pronounced Camino. I just had to look. I feel like I thought I heard it say that before, but I wanted to make sure. Yeah, Michael Cimino.
I've heard it too before, but I forget. I always think about Al Camino. So,
Al Pacino. Al Pacino.
Well, I used to know Al Camino.
I love the pussy. No, yeah.
But yeah, it's a fun little interesting watch. I mean, it's a sort of a small sort of piece of movie history that I'm sure most people don't really remember. But I think it's definitely worth a watch.
Yeah, I agree. It's a lot of fun. It's on Tubi. It's on MGM Plus.
Yes.
Which is why I watched it through
Amazon Prime, right?
Yeah,
which is correct. Part of that. Yeah, no commercials. You can watch the whole fucking movie, no problem. So
yeah, it was great. And it's fun. I mean, it's definitely worth checking out, like you were saying, Jeremy. I kind of wish I could see a little bit longer version. I don't know about 140 minute version, but definitely another 15 to 20. I'm cool with.
Maybe shave off like 10 minutes or 15 minutes or so. But I think the movie overall, if we have some gaps filled up, would make more sense. I mean, even so much that
Definitely plot holes.
Yeah, because we have that opening besides the car getting dropped off by Kelly Lynch and her going to the bus stop, and cut running to the courthouse. There's obviously a guy who lets her in, who knows her, calls her by her last name, Mrs. Whatever.
Yep.
So there's already some connection there that's been there for a long time. I mean, even the judge knows her. So like, it's just kind of like we're missing things here and there. So I mean,
a lot of context. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the context. Even this fuck up, I call it a fuck up because it was. But the fact that we get introduced to Mickey Rourke in shackles and waistband shackles too, but then at some point in the courtroom, they're gonna have she's gonna go have a conversation with Mickey Rourke. They do all the same stuff they would do, all the guards do, like they go through every gate door, lock it back, open up, lock it back. They never fucking chain him up ever again. They just like let him run free. Like basically, he is free to do everything with his hands, and that's when everything gets fucked. It's where he beats the fucking security guard up and all that shit. It's like, why would you do that? You should cuff them all back up. They have this conversation. Hey, they don't do any of that. It's bizarre to me, but yeah, it's just one of those things. And it's not that big a deal, really, in the less scheme of things. But like, it's just interesting to see that stuff sort of stuff happen with a guy who sort of, you know, went for these sort of epic films. And you see every time you see like these weird flaws, you're like, whoa, okay, well, continuity is kind of strange, but man, no big deal, whatever.
Right. No, I agree. And I agree with you. You kind of feel those speed bumps a lot in these pothole plot holes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's still fun. It's still a fun movie.
It is. It's still fun. I think, and I think everybody's doing the best that they can. Besides Rourke, I don't think Rourke ever played a villain like this before. So I think
it might be his first time
doing this. So I think he's kind of new to this game too. Also, probably pretty close to doing, pretty new to cocaine at this point. So
I don't know if he was new to it. Maybe he was just more on it.
More on it. That's right.
Everybody was.
But yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see all these characters that you've seen before, and a storyline that works this way. It's hard to explain. A lot of like, you have to see it for yourself, and you also have to see like Italian exploitation films, and especially ones that are like giallos or sort of like these suspense thrillers, or whatever, because you have to see cops and cops talk to each other, and you have to see the plot sort of roll together beside each other. It doesn't really make it's a lot of the dream logic shit, in my opinion.
Right, which I agree.
Which I consider a lot of those Italian exploitation movies as sort of the Blacklist Killers or those thrillers, or whatever. They have this weird sort of floaty sort of editing to them, where like, am I missing more to the story, or is this the way the movie should have been? With this one, right, we know we're missing 40 minutes, so it's like, okay, well, this is not what Cimino was going for, so who knows what it could have been, but. Yeah, woulda, shoulda, coulda. There could be a cut of this version in fucking 2 years from Arrow. Who knows?
Well, no, probably not, because apparently there's only a few deleted scenes that even exist now. That's what I was reading in the trivia. There's only that they were saying. There's only a few splices of film left that, yeah.
So. Yeah, yeah. It's like that Event Horizon thing. Like all that stuff. Like all the edits were like on VHS film, and there's just no way to splice them back in.
Right, so, that's a damn shame.
So all you get is like really low quality, ugly shit. So, luckily enough, though, and hopefully one day on the podcast we'll talk about it. But luckily enough, you know, he did that the big Western with what's his name? We just talked about that fucking movie. What's his name?
Wait, what?
Look it up. No. Hold on. Look it up real quick. His big bomb, Heaven's Gate. Luckily enough, with Heaven's Gate, Criterion got those other fucking reels and spliced them back in, so you can actually watch his director's cut. So, I mean,
yeah, I'm gonna have to get that one for sure.
But we'll have to cover that one day. That'll be a lot of fun because I feel like I've seen it before, but I don't know. I mean, you watch the trailer and you're like, the trailer looks so familiar to a lot of movies back in the big movie epic westerns back in the day. But you know, who knows? But I'd love to get into it. See,
oh, yeah, me too, man.
Super violent. I've heard it's at the end. I've heard it's like the last like 40 minutes. It's like people get blown the fuck away.
Nice. So, yeah, all what I've heard.
But yeah, there it is. Desperate Hours. Not to be confused with Extreme Hours or whatever that Michael Doug, not Michael,
oh,
Michael
Extreme Measures.
Extreme Measures, yeah. Which I always
with Eddie Garcia. I'll never forget him lifting the bags of water to like do curling or by
bicep. Yeah, Martin, like, yeah, dude, yeah. In his cell, like, it's awesome.
It's like,
yeah.
Jesus Christ, Batman.
And Batman going like, "Hey, your son needs my heart, right?
Yeah, like, right.
Gonna give kids the heart. You gonna shoot me in the heart now?" Just think of the whole hospital. It's fucking awesome. But yeah, not to be confused with that, because I get those two confused. So, and I think there's a movie with Hugh Grant and Gene Hackman that has the same name too. And they're also doctors too. Look this up real quick.
Extreme Prejudice?
No. That's a movie that with Nick Nolte. It's a Western.
That's right.
Walter,
yeah.
Hill movie. Let's see, hold on. Hugh Grant. We're doing this.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I can't remember that title. That's going to piss me off.
It's Extreme something. And I for some reason get that. I get it confused every fucking time, but I got to look this up and let the people know about it. So it came out in the 90s, I believe 1998 or some shit like that. Let's see. Extreme Measures.
Cool. Oh shit. I thought we said that. I thought I said that.
Did you say it? I'm sorry. If you did say it, I apologize. Yeah.
Well, then, so what's the one with Michael Keaton then?
That's it's also something like that too. They might have it. Well, what if they have the same name? Hold on, I'll look it up.
Holy shit. I don't think they do. I looked up Extreme Measures. It just got Hugh Grant. So what's that?
Hugh Grant and Gene Hackman.
Right, and the other one's Michael Keaton and Andy Garcia.
Keaton, okay, I'm looking up. Let's look this up before.
Yeah, I'm going for it too.
it's also a 90s movie as well. Early 2000s, possibly.
It's 90s for sure.
Okay, we're in 2000s. Oh,
Desperate
Measures. God, you're right. Desperate Measures. So, holy shit.
So Extreme Measures have a desperate. It's almost the exact same. It's hilarious. <We're> so close. That's funny as fuck.
It is funny as fuck, man. Because when I was looking at the movies last night, the other night, I was like, Desperate Hours? Like, that the Michael Keaton movie or the Hugh Grant movie? Like, no, it's not that at all. Yeah, Desperate Measures.
They came out the same year too, 1998. Measures and Extreme shit. Measures.
That's what fucking crazy.
That just goes to show you Hollywood. I swear to God, it's like we got The Illusionist and The Prestige the same year, and like,
yeah.
So you go back and looks like, especially in the '80s and nineties.
Yeah,
like shit. So many, you know, science fiction movies are almost identically the same. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, that's fucking wild. Holy shit. Damn.
But yeah.
Anyways,
yeah, that was a fun tangent.
Oh my god, that was amazing. You know, it's also, I gotta mention this one thing on that with Desperate Measures with Keaton. The guy, Tracy Walter, who plays him, he just plays a medical inmate. He's the guy who plays Bob in Batman, the original in 89
oh,
Batman.
Oh shit, nice. Yeah. Bob, that's awesome.
I never wanted to die.
Yeah, I didn't realize. That's cool, man.
Anyways, all right. Well, check it out.
There it is.
I think you dig it, and check out the shit we talked about before with Mike talking about Ripley, and if you got You have Audible. Check out fucking Red Dragon. If you're missing out on, if you've never listened to Thomas Harris before, please do. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and start hit fucking do Red Dragon and hit the ground running. Go run through the series. They're great.
Run the whole series, man. The first two, absolutely incredible. The last two are interesting and still well written. So hey, yeah. But yeah. Thanks for everybody listening to the show. We really appreciate it. Check us out on Podbean. You can find our backlog there. And don't be a piece of shit.
Be nice. Talk to you later.